On April 17, 2009, members of the Maine Legislature's Natural Resources Committee heard from supporters, opponents, and those neither for nor against LD 1282, an act to protect and enhance Maine marine fisheries. The bill requires the owners of hydropower dams in Maine to enable safe and reliable passage over and around dams for Maine's diadromous fishes, salmon, alewives, eels, and other animals that spend part of their lives breathing fresh water, another part as saltwater breathers. This is the testimony in neither for nor against this bill by Carrie Hardy.
Seeing none, neither for nor against.
Thank you, Representative Duchesne. I'm still a little flustered. I came by bike from Rockland this morning, and I'm glad there were so many opponents to this bill because it gave me time to go put a different shirt on after getting here. But my name is Kerry Hardy, and I live in Rockland. Like most Mainers, I have several jobs. I'm helping to start a new business in Rockport called Farmers Fair, which is all about creating community by selling almost exclusively locally grown or produced food. I also have a business card that describes me as a historical ecologist, whatever that is, and I've just written a book about Native Americans in this part of the world and how they utilized and even improved the environment that they had here. In the process of doing the research for that book, it was inevitable that I kept bumping into river fisheries and how important they were to Maine's human history. I really like history, and what I like about it is that if we preserve it and learn from it, we can avoid making the same mistakes over and over again. And that's the feeling that I get when I come to these hearings, and this is the fourth or fifth time that I've come over in the past few years to participate in fish passage legislation hearings. So rather than rehash what's sort of turning into a tennis match between familiar faces, though I will say just in a mild rebuttal to Mr. Riley's observation that we keep seeing the same people bringing these bills forward, from the other side, we keep seeing the same lobbyists showing up and saying the same things in opposition, and the same DEP or DMR staff showing up and patting themselves on the back about what a good job is being done while the fish populations keep plummeting for the most part. Sameness is a sword with two edges to it. Anyway, I'm not for or against this bill, but I am for doing whatever we can to work towards restoring the fisheries that we once had in Maine. I'm going to talk as quickly as I can because I know what your schedules are like on three issues today. One is to just quickly try and make the past real to all of you so you can so we can all be on the same page about what we once had and what we've thrown away or given away. The second thing is to try and convince you that we could have something like our former spawning runs once again in this state, and not in the far distant future, but in our lifetimes. The third thing is the hardest of all, I think. I'm going to try and convince you that in this tragic waste of a natural resource, the single greatest culprit, past, present, and future, is Maine's own government, and specifically the executive branch of our government. That's a pretty tall order to convince you on those things, but I'm not doing it by myself. I have a dead man helping me. His name is Charles Atkins, and he's probably been mentioned here today, but I need to tell you some other things about him. He was our first commissioner of fisheries back in the 1860s, when almost everyone in Maine, citizens, government, everybody, was desperately hoping to bring the fish runs back. And as a result, Mr. Atkins was given unusual powers. He got a lot done. He started the Atlantic Salmon Hatchery at Craig Brook, and if he hadn't done that, we wouldn't have Penobscot salmon today. And, to the chagrin, I think, of our state agencies, if not for Craig Brook and keeping the salmon stock separated by rivers, the federal government probably wouldn't have been able to prove its case about genetic differences between the many different strains of Atlantic salmon we have in our rivers. But thanks to Craig Brook, the science was available, and we could examine the DNA of fish river by river. So that was a good thing Atkins did. I think the best thing he did were these two comprehensive reports he wrote. One in 1868 that was about 100 pages long and was published in the Agricultural Report for the state of Maine that year. And the second one was 20 years later in about 1887 in a very massive federal government publication called Fisheries and Fishery Industries of the United States. And that report was about half as long. But it was 20-some years later in Atkins' career, and he had gotten a lot done by then, so both reports are interesting.
Mr. Hardy, I'm going to have to apologize and ask you to be fairly focused on the bill and abbreviate history so it's not in real time, and because we have a lot of people in the hallways who are really anxious to wait on the next bill.
I understand. However, please understand also that I've made a three-hour bicycle ride to testify. These bills come up once every 2 years. And this stuff is important. My testimony is as important as the others who have spoken.
I certainly mean no slight whatsoever, and I certainly understand I've let others go on as well. So I'm not curtailing you. I am asking that you stay relatively focused on the bill itself.
And I will jump to the chase for you and say that I do not think the current bill has teeth enough. That's where I'm headed. What I want to convince you of is that the state has gone progressively backward since 1880. That was sort of our high point of fishery restoration because Mr. Atkins was given power. He didn't have a governor sitting on top of him telling him what Reddy Kilowatt wanted him to do on the rivers. He had some autonomy, and he used it. And so in his 1868 report on the Presumpscot River, he said there are 8 impassable dams between the ocean and Sebago Lake. By his 1887 report, he had put fishways on all of the dams between the ocean and Sebago Lake, and alewives had been returned. That sort of thing doesn't happen nowadays. You know, we have commissioners in all of our agencies, and it's right in the language of the Maine statutes. These commissioners serve at the pleasure of the governor. And businesses learned long ago in the state, starting about 1754 with Sylvester Gardner right down the river, that it's much easier to befriend the executive branch than it is to just work on individual legislators. You get a lot more done if you have a friend in the Blaine House or in Boston, which is where Gardner worked his politics, because it was before Maine statehood. So what is memorable to me about Atkins' report and why I think anyone considering fisheries legislation in the state really needs to read them, and they are both available online, is that you learn, for one thing, every species of fish needs a different section of river. We've heard many times coming from either state agencies or opponents of the bill, the theory of letting the fish bump into one dam and show us that they have enough numbers, and then we'll get them up over the next one. Well, if the water that a fish like an Atlantic salmon needs to spawn is 100 miles upstream and they're bumping into a dam at the head of tide, you're going to wait a long time before their numbers increase enough to justify getting them up over the next dam. So that kind of reasoning should be viewed very suspiciously. I'll give you about 30 seconds of the kind of things you'll find if you do get a chance to read Atkins. You will learn that Atlantic salmon on the Piscataqua River, all of the rivers in the southwestern part of the state, this may surprise you, are the best salmon rivers. Atkins considered the Androscoggin to be the best Atlantic salmon nursery in the whole state. Times have changed, but he explained that the gravelly rivers we have in the Freiburg area, the Crooked River, are where Atlantic salmon need to be. He reported, and I've actually heard our state's biologists contradicting this, that Atlantic salmon were abundant at the falls in Rumford on the Androscoggin. The last one was caught there about 1815, according to Atkins. And it's so far back that people nowadays seem to have forgotten that they made it all the way to Rumford. So please, if you get a chance, give Atkins a read. One other thing that I really want to mention from Atkins is just one example on the Kennebec. Some of you probably know where Caratunk is, at least 100 miles up from Tidewater. There's a 16-foot vertical waterfall there. Atlantic salmon were observed by eyewitnesses clearing that waterfall and then proceeding on up to the Dead River. There are even anecdotal accounts of trappers and hunters finding Atlantic salmon in the Moose River above Moosehead Lake. So if you read Atkins, you will learn where the historic range of the fish was. And the last thing I'm going to read you is a very important legal opinion from Mr. Atkins, because he had to research this as part of his report. And it'd be very, very good if I can find this, because I... Okay.
Is this possible? Is this something you could possibly submit to the committee in writing?
I do have this written for you, and we'll leave it. But it's a short quote, and I have found it. At these hearings, you will often hear Maine state agencies saying, "We don't need any new authorities. We already have the authority to require fishways or to reopen a dam's license and change the conditions." In fact, Atkins said since 1868, the state commissioners of fisheries have had jurisdictions in such matter, with power to order fishways built or repairs made at their discretion, in all cases serving up the formal plans and specifications. So we've had it for that long. The problem, the real rub, is that we don't use it. The executive branch doesn't want to use it now. They don't want new laws. They don't want to enforce the existing laws. So for us to go forward, I think what needs to happen is that we somehow need to find a way to make the executive branch execute and enforce laws. George Mitchell said, "It's a sad day when you have to sue the EPA to make them protect the environment." You could just as easily substitute DMR or DEP. And that's where we are with fisheries actions in the state of Maine today. The only victories are coming from the third branch of government, the judicial, because we cannot get enforcement of the laws we have, including the Clean Water Act, which is a federal law that we should be subscribing to. So thank you for your time.
I believe Representative Welch has a question.
Yes.
Well, I just wanted to thank you for coming all the way. I passed you on the 17.
You had the silver green Prius with a skate plate on it.
I do.
Yeah, I said.
But I thought I ought to be bicycling too. So that's a great
maybe she'll stop and say, "Throw the bike in."
Well, I should have.
Next time. And also, Representative Iott, I do have a map that someone gave me showing all the dams on the rivers in the state. If that would be of interest to you to look at, I'll loan it to you for the day. Okay.
Well, if you start now, you're going to beat Representative Welch home.
I still have some GMO bills next door that I want to testify on.
Yeah, right. Thank you. Is there anyone else who needs to speak on this bill? Seeing none, this hearing is concluded.